Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to this episode of We're Not Fucking Historians. Me being Shane Todd, she being...
Hazel Hayes.
Correct.
I just felt like you're on a roll there. I was leaving you do it.
Yeah. Look, we got to say this up front at the start of this. This is the last episode of this podcast, which makes me very sad to say and isn't a joke. I have this thing where people assume anything I say is a joke, even when I'm speaking to a doctor and I'm like, I'm concerned about this. He goes, a good one. But no, this is the last episode of the podcast, which will surprise a lot of people. And to just let people know the reason for that is, it's a number of things. It's the remote recording mainly. So if you listen from the start, you might have seen or heard that we were in studio. So I travelled over to London, what did you call? Remember the guy used to have the stick and then the handkerchief with all stuff in it.
Huckleberry Finn.
Huckleberry Finn. I used to travel over to London.
You were a lot like Huck Finn. I did. I used to say that. Yeah.
So I'd have travelled over to London.
Your wee handkerchief stick.
And we did a load of episodes, but with just stand-up being back on and everything else in between and family, all that kind of stuff, it just became difficult to actually just schedule time to be together to do these episodes. And you keep writing books, Hazel.
I feel like you're breaking up with me right now.
Look, it's not you.
It's definitely you. No, I'm great.
Oh, no, it's me.
It's 100% you. No, it's sad though. It feels like a little ending of something, and I'm not going to see you as often, which makes me very sad. But as you say, it's just it was something we kind of started in lockdown, like I think many things where we were sitting around all day with not much to do, and it was wonderful and a great time and a great laugh. And then we got in studio and then sort of the world opened back up and you've got a kid and a life and stand-up tours and I've got a second book to work on, and it's just literally fitting in everything.
So it's the last episode, but what that means is we go out with a bang.
We go out with a big old bang. This better be a bloody good episode, Shane.
Oh,
it's all on you, mate.
The most pressure of all time.
It really is.
Look, we're going to strap in. We're going to have fun. And also, if there is another lockdown, if there's another horrendous virus that goes about, one thing you can look forward to is this podcast coming back.
Round two.
But look, this is all about the final episode of We're Not Fucking Historians. And also, how mad that we got a podcast pass with that name.
I know. I'm still in shock, honestly. I really can't believe that they let us do that. You were the one who a few weeks ago was like, do you think we should not have fucking in the title? Like, is it a bit much? Is it a bit aggressive?
Yeah.
It was almost like we were so concerned with whether we could, we didn't stop to think whether we should, Shane. And that is a direct Jeff Goldblum quote from Jurassic Park. So you're welcome.
But you know what? Fuck it.
Fuck it.
Fuck it.
I'm going to curse so much on this episode. I'm going to drop the C word every 20 seconds. Even just like while you're talking, I'm just going to say it.
Release the unreleased episode. Anyway.
Release the Snyder Cut.
This is the last ever episode of We're Not Fucking Historians. Woo! Enjoy it. This episode is all about Ernest Shackleton. And a lot of people are like, yes, if you're going to do one last episode, make it about Ernest Shackleton. Am I
Ernie
right?
Ernie Shackers, man. Ernie Shackers all the way.
Take a guess who that is, Hazel, if you took
the video. I've got fucking clue. I was just trying to be enthusiastic.
Let me tell you, born 15th of February, 1874 in County Kildare. Now, I think I've asked you before, have you been to County Kildare? I've been to Kildare Village for some shopping on my way down to Cork to a gig once.
Yeah,
and it was
fabulous. We've all been to Kildare for some shopping. I've got family in Kildare, so yes, I have been there many times.
Well, Ernie Shackleton was an Anglo-Irish Antarctic explorer who attempted to reach the South Pole and got in the one almighty palaver. And that's not the place you want to get into a palaver.
No.
You want to get into a palaver. Ideally, you get into a palaver in your own house.
Palaver would be a good name for a nightclub.
Palaver?
Yeah, like you're just saying, like, you don't want to get into a palaver, but you would want to get into this one.
Palaver sounds like somewhere you'd go in, like, Ayia Napa.
Yes, it does. Yes,
I'll get your guest list for palaver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who would be DJing there?
Oh, my God. I don't know any DJs.
Ian Van Dahl.
Sure. I think that should be our next venture.
You think we should start DJing?
No, set up a club.
Oh, okay.
Get some DJs in.
Well, look, this guy, he was educated in Dulwich College. He entered the Mercantile Marine Service 1890. He becomes a sub-lieutenant in the Royal Naval Reserve in 1901. Look, I could tell you loads more about his background, but really, let me ask you this. He takes part in this expedition to reach the Ross Ice Shelf. I don't know what that is. It's the last episode. It's the last day of term. Let's just have fun. Who's your favourite Ross?
Well, I mean, Geller comes to mind, but I don't actually like Ross Geller.
Fine by me!
I might go Kemp.
Ross Kemp. Yeah, he's a good Ross. Bob Ross, the painter the ASMR painter. He paints, but he talks really soft while he's painting, and it's lovely to hear.
Jonathan Ross?
Yes, all good Rosses. I love that this is the last day of term episode. That's such a good that's such a good description of it. It's just like, do you know what, guys? I haven't made a class schedule today. I've brought some board games.
We're doing today's episode outside. Today's episode's happening out in the fresh air. So yada yada yada. He joins this guy called Captain Robert Scott's National Antarctic Discovery Expedition. Apparently he's like a big guy, Robert Scott. Big history
Robert Scott sounds familiar. I don't know a lot of Antarctic explorers, I'll be honest, Shane.
Yeah, so he joins him, but his health suffers and he gets removed from duty and sent home on a supply ship in March 1903. And then you fill in your own gap here, because in 1908 he returns to the Antarctic as the leader of the British Nimrod Expedition. Now, I don't know what he does in those 5 years, but let's just say it's a glow-up.
Yeah.
He's jacked, you know what I mean? He's wearing like a lot of low-cut vests, muscle fit. he's just popping out of everywhere. And
Yeah. He didn't buy any new clothes. He just kept the old ones so that they were like really tight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
So he just shows up like he's launching a new range with Boohoo. And the expedition that they go on, they don't get to reach where they're supposed to go, called the Edward the Seventh Peninsula. They end up getting like murdered on an island. They get within 97 miles of the South Pole. He's responsible for the first ascent of Mount Erebus. They return to base in 1909 and they discover that the Nimrod has set sail 2 days earlier. So Shackleton and all his boys set fire to the camp to signal to the ship, which receives the signal and returns to camp. And then he successfully retrieves them. And then when he gets back to England, our boy Ernie gets knighted and gets made commander of the Royal Victorian Order, which would look pretty good on LinkedIn.
Yeah, it would. I'm really confused. It sounds like he's just failed a lot. Why is he getting knighted now?
Yeah, he gets failed. He gets kicked out of places for bad health. He's not having a good start to life, but
like, they literally missed the boat.
They missed the boat.
On the way back.
Yeah.
And as an explorer, I would have thought that was pretty fucking important. It's not like you're catching a Ryanair flight from Luton. Like, you do actually need to be there on time when the ship is leaving the Antarctic.
Yeah, do you think when it was just about when they did the boarding call, do you think he went, nah, we've plenty of time, we'll go on last? Do you think he went to Pret?
Yeah. Yeah, he might have gone to practice, got a little panini or something.
1914 in August, the British Imperial Trans-Antarctic Expedition, which, hey, shorten that.
Fucking hell.
B-I-T-E, bite.
Bite, love it.
Leaves England under Shackleton's leadership. So he's this Irish guy, he's in the British Navy, he's a big deal, and they planned to cross the Antarctic from a base on the Weddell Sea to a place called McMurdo Sound via the South Pole. But their expedition ship, the Endurance, gets trapped in ice off the coast and drifts for 10 months before being crushed in by some pack ice. So, they leave South Georgia for the Antarctic on December 5th, 1914. They're carrying 27 boys, plus a stowaway as well, who becomes the ship's steward. There's 69 dogs. There's a tomcat called Mrs. Chippy. What do you think of that? Mrs. Chippy's on board.
You were prepared for Mrs. Chippy. I honestly wasn't. I have no words for this.
All you need to know is...
Hold on. They left South Georgia with 27 boys, a stowaway who becomes the steward. This is like that fucking Christmas song. 5 golden rings... a bunch of dogs and a cat called Mrs. Chippy.
69 dogs and a cat called Mrs. Chippy.
That's the title of a film, and I want it made, and it's this film. That is the fucking title.
Okay, Andy Serkis.
69 plays dogs and Mrs. a cat Chippy. Called Mrs. Chippy is a brilliant name for a film.
What's the name of the episode now? So
yes.
The goal of this expedition under Shackleton, who twice by this point has got within like 90 odd miles of the South Pole. This is his like mission, so is to get there.
Yeah.
Is to reach the South Pole and establish a base on the Antarctica's Weddell Sea coast. From there, a small party, including himself, is going to cross the continent and arrive at the Ross Sea, which is south of New Zealand, where another group's going to wait for them, and they're going to leave like food and fuel for them along the way. So that's the plan. That's the plan. But 2 days after leaving South Georgia, the Endurance enters what's called pack ice, which I could explain to you, Hazel.
Could you?
No. So I won't. But it's a form of ice. It's a barrier of thick sea ice that goes all the way around the Antarctic continent.
Oh, is it a bit like when you leave the freezer open too long?
Yes.
And then the next time you come back to it, it's just fucking packed. Like, it's just thick with...
And that's why they call it pack ice.
And then you've got to get the little scraper and like go in at it.
Yeah, and the thing is, these boys didn't have scrapers. That's where they went wrong.
I'm sure they just didn't have scrapers big enough, you know?
Yeah, they needed massive. They should have got rid of some of the 69 dogs they brought, kept Mrs. Chippy, and fired a few scrapers in, but they didn't.
Yeah.
So for several weeks, the ship poked and prodded its way through.
Cheeky hairdryer would have sorted that out, sorted that right out.
Yeah, but then I think they were wearing a lot of beanies and stuff back then. I don't think because it was cold.
Yeah, shame.
Yeah, but they have to divert and go all these different ways round the ice. On January 18th, this gale of wind presses the ice against them and land and basically like strands them. So there's no way forward, there's no way back. And the Endurance is shipwrecked. And this guy that was on board called Thomas Ordelies, he describes it as being frozen like an almond in the middle of a chocolate bar.
Gosh, it's not the first analogy that comes to mind, is it?
They're fucked, basically. There's nothing else to do. They're just going to have to hunker down and wait out the winter, which, by the way, that would totally break my spirit as soon as someone says, we're just going to wait out the winter. I'd be like, let's not. Apparently Shackleton just, this is a direct quote, they said, he didn't rage at all or show outwardly the slightest sign of disappointment, and he never lost his optimism, which, to me, if I was on board, would be annoying.
I agree.
Oh, guys, it's going to be all good.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, shut up, it's not. But in private, he wasn't that optimistic, and he says to this other guy on board called Frank Worsley, Frank Worsley has
said
a very,
that with
like...
such disdain. Frank.
Yeah. Just the fact that he's called Frank Worsley, he sounds like someone who could have been about in like the 80s of this century.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But he says that this ship can't live in this. It may be a few months and it may only be a few weeks or days, but listen to this scary sentence I'm going to leave you on before we go into some ads. He says, what the ice gets, the ice keeps. How frosty is that? Let's go into these ads and then come back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome back to We're Not Fucking Historians. We're talking about Ernest Shackleton, a.k.a. Ernie, who's an Irish ship captain. He's trapped in the Antarctic. He's fucked it so bad. He just keeps trying to get to the Antarctic.
They say, fucking it.
Try, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Three times, Ernie, stop going to the South Pole.
Yeah, Ernie Shacks. Stop going to the fucking Antarctic, Ernie. It's just, it isn't working. And you know what else I think sometimes doesn't work for people is naming their ships stuff that like can't fail.
Yeah,
they just seem to always fail. Like calling a ship the Endurance just seems like you're kind of asking for it, honestly. It's like, well, then the universe is going to throw fucking everything at that ship to prove that it will not endure.
The unsinkable Titanic. You may as well call it the definitely will not sink on the way to the Antarctic. We'll come back intact and it's all good. It just gets, this ship gets swallowed up by ice and they're stuck and they can't move. The crew salvage as many provisions as they can while, now this is, you know the way in these tales it always gets a bit grim at some point?
I was about to say, are they going to eat those dogs?
No, to answer your question, no.
Okay.
They sacrifice anything that added weight or would consume valuable resources. So they get rid of some Bibles, they get rid of some books,
some
clothing, some keepsakes. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, here we go. Some of
not Mrs. Chippy.
Some of the smaller dogs are gotten rid of, and as is the unfortunate Mrs. Chippy. I mean, fuck's sake, how heavy is Mrs. Chippy? Just keep.
She can't be that heavy, and she's obviously not eating that fucking much. She's a cat.
Nah, but she obviously was quite fat. It sounds like Mrs. Chippy was a problem.
The name does imply she was a chunky cat. Okay.
She's the only cat on board as well. They call her Mrs. Chippy because breakfast, lunch and dinner, she's having a fish supper.
I mean, having just said don't get rid of Mrs. Chippy, like, surely throwing her overboard would be a less, like, prudent action than maybe keeping her and fattening her up.
Well, you know what I like to think happened? I like to think they put her on a little bit of ice. They, like, pushed her into the water and she just sailed on to Iceland, where she was taken in by a family of Inuits, if you can
say. They're in the Antarctic.
Yeah, well, it was one hell of a bit of ice. It was a real wind that day. The initial plans to march over the ice towards land, but they couldn't do that after they managed just 7 miles in 7 days, and it's freezing, so they couldn't get too far away from the ship. So they just literally have to wait, which is the hardest thing. And on the 7th of April 1916, the peaks of the Clarence and Elephant Islands come into view. So the mist clears a little bit and they can see some land. On the 9th of April, the ice cracks, it splits beneath them, they start to be able to move the boat and go ahead. So they're like, happy days, we're rescued. But the open ocean is a nightmare because it's still in the middle of a blizzard type thing. They're getting frozen spray in their face, there's water all over them, the boat's getting battered. And these boys are just having a bad time, and I don't think they would have had iPads or anything on board, so they're probably just
bored
out of their skull.
And they threw all the books overboard as well, and the dogs.
They had nothing to read.
Might have kept them company. Fuck, you know. It does occur to me, you know, being an explorer back then probably wasn't that pleasant.
No, and I don't think you got well paid for it because... I'll bring this up because we don't have the time to fit this in, but people said he was bad with money and he always had to be chased for debts after all these big expeditions, but because I think he was just obsessed with getting to the South Pole. So what happens is they keep going. There's 6 days in the sea. They see these islands 30 miles ahead, the Clarence and Elephant Islands, but they're knackered. Yeah. The main captain, this guy Worsley, Frank Worsley, hasn't slept in 80 hours. So it's like he's on a bender. It's like being on a bender at Glastonbury or something.
Not that you know what that's like.
They're crippled with seasickness. And Frank Worsley says that half of the party at this point were insane. Weird to call them a party. But they keep going. They keep going. And on the 15th of April, they get ashore on Elephant Island. Now, this is where the fun starts.
No, please tell me that they just get ashore and there's a nice little pub and they all sit in and there's a fire and they've some soup and they're just fine.
The Elephant Island Inn is closed. It's the first time they've been on dry land since leaving South Georgia 497 days ago. So there's nobody there. They stay on these islands for 9 days and Shackleton, Worsley and four others set out on lifeboats to go and find a whaling station that's 800 miles away. I mean, this is a nightmare. 16 days.
This is an absolute nightmare. What are they eating? Where are they staying on these islands?
They eat seal, I think. I know.
I didn't deserve that. Hey-o.
Baby.
Thank you. Baby.
Instead of a kiss from a rose, he gets a bat from an Irishman.
Lovely.
For 16 days, they battle through the worst conditions possible, and it's throwing their little boat all over the place. But eventually, they make it ashore. They make it ashore, and they get to this place, this whaling station. But when they arrive on shore, they've still got to walk. So, like, everywhere is uninhabitable. So they docked their boats where this whaling station is, but they got to spend 36 hours hiking just to get to this station. I mean, there's nothing around.
It's a bit like changing a bank.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But there's nobody around. And you imagine, right, being in this whaling station, if it's your job to work there, the whole point is you don't see anyone ever. I mean, you're literally there just recording stats about whales.
Like being a lighthouse keeper or something.
Exactly. All of a sudden, we knock at the door. Three guys show up, bearded, wild hair, probably looking like bags of shit, to be honest.
And
they just show up nearly 2 years after being shipwrecked, and they're like, any chance of helping the lads? So they go back. There's this, like, it's a nightmare to go back and get the rest of these men who think that they're not going to be rescued, because they're there for another 5 months after Shackleton left to go and get help. But he does it. He tries three times, and eventually he gets a boat from Chile on the 30th of August, 1916, and it was bloody chilly. And he goes and rescues the other men, and everyone survives, which is
everyone.
Crazy. Everyone survives.
I doubt that. There would have been at least one natural death along the way. 2 years.
I know. Do you think they prop people up like Weekend at Bernie's? They're like, no, he's fine.
I think they fudged the numbers on that a bit. Yeah. I think they stuck some sunglasses on on a few of them and just walked them off.
They survive, and I think they're all like insane off, like verified insane.
You would be. I mean, Jesus, I got left home for a week there with COVID and I nearly went mad. Like, it's 2 years in the fucking Antarctic.
You said left alone like you're Kevin McAllister.
Yeah, I did. They left me.
He is awful. Apparently the crew were just about to chow down on a lunch of, get ready for this, see how this tickles your fancy, boiled seal's backbone. You fancy a little bit of boiled seal's backbone? Maybe a little bit of pepper?
Obviously I don't, Shane, but you know, you trapped me in Antarctica for 2 fucking years and asked me do I want that. Yeah, probably.
You put me in the Ivy in London for 10 minutes, I might have that.
Like, I think I'd be one of those people who, if, you know, deserted somewhere, it wouldn't be long before I was drinking piss, honestly. I'm not above it.
Yeah, I mean, you just said you were left alone at home for a week. Probably day two you were going for it. Ernie Shackleton, like, he fucked it. And then in the end, he did get everyone
rescued. I'm very impressed with that because, you know, I can't help but feel like if I did get away and make it back to land, I'd be reluctant, Shane. I'm just going to be honest here. I'd be reluctant to get back on a fucking boat and go back to that place.
Oh, I'd only Uber after that. People. Yeah, I'd only Uber after that for sure. But it doesn't put him off because he serves in the British Army during World War One, and he attempts, listen to this, he attempts a fourth Antarctic expedition in 1929.
Why?
He wants to go round the continent. But unfortunately he dies at 47, just before he starts his journey.
So he never made it?
He never made it. Apparently, the time and effort he put into raising funds to finance his expedition and the strain of like all that travel and the cold and all that sort of thing wears him out. He loses his strength and he dies of a heart attack in South Georgia, where he's buried.
It's a lot like this podcast, really.
Yeah, we had the goal of circumnavigating the world.
Yeah, he went in strong, he went in hopeful. He tried and tried and tried. He really tried his best, you know, he really did. Just, you know, it wasn't to be in the end.
But we're being pushed out to sea. I think we're like Mrs. Chippy. You know, I think we just get put on a little bit of ice and pushed out into the ocean, and who knows where we're going to end up.
Just drift off.
Yeah.
Into the west.
But yeah, look, there's a Hollywood ending here. We love that.
Do it. Let's do it.
We every episode we've done, we've always seen it as a film. And here's the big ending. So the Endurance was just left behind. Just left in the ocean, left in the Antarctic to just kind of sit and rot. But this year, Hazel,
this year,
scientists found it 107 years after it sank.
The ghostly Endurance, discovered in Antarctica's frigid waters nearly 2 miles deep.
When you saw the name Endurance, what went through your heart?
Oh, it was a jaw-dropping moment. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up. I was stunned.
The ship crushed by sea ice and sunk in 1915. It is a symbol of Sir Ernest Shackleton's legendary leadership. All 28 men on board survived, camping on ice floes for 5 months, then escaping in small boats.
Ernest Shackleton is a hero. He rescued his men from almost certain death. He survived against all the odds, and he did so with compassion, leadership, bravery.
That happened this year. The Endurance, the lost vessel of Antarctic explorer and one of our own, Sir Ernest Shackleton, was found at the bottom of the Weddell Sea. It had been sitting 3 kilometres below sea level for over a century. And listen to this, apparently it looks exactly like it did the day it went down.
Well, it was fucking frozen, wasn't it?
Because it's so cold, I think.
All the timber is still, it would have been together. In great condition.
And apparently the word endurance is still visible on the stern. And that's exactly what this podcast is. It may be
that's
going
exactly
down.
What this is, Shane.
It may be going down, but it will be preserved through history. And we will look at it and go, these people tried. These people had a mission and they set sail and they tried. And it can still be appreciated. We can dive down and take pictures of it still.
And some say, Shane, that the ghost of Ernie Shacks still walks the boards today.
Yeah.
Just like our ghosts will be in, you know, like podcast listings on various podcast apps.
Yeah, we're the Ernie Shackleton of podcasts.
We really are.
We try, we keep trying, and eventually
keep fucking trying, man.
We end up at the bottom of the ocean. But we're preserved.
I love how this is a story about a man who, like, just went through hell and then chose to go through hell again and again and again to reach his fucking goal, and we're just going, nah, sod it. Do you know what? Doing a podcast and living life, too hard.
It's like the woman who was on the Titanic, survived, then a couple of years later was on a boat that sank. You know, it's like, just stop being on boats.
Just stop, yeah.
Someone said to BBC News, one of the explorers who found the ship said, it's upright, it's well proud of the seabed, it's intact, and it's in a brilliant state of preservation.
Bit like yourself.
Bit like myself.
That's a great story. I had not heard of Ernie or his various voyages and expeditions, but what a lovely story to end it on. I was so engrossed. I genuinely was aware sometimes people can't see my face, so they weren't seeing any of my reactions. They were just getting dead silence from my end to the mic. No, it's a good one. Thank you for that, Shane. Shall we round her off with a few cheeky emails? Our last emails.
Let's do that. We have, thank you very much to everyone who has sent an email in so far and gave us some correspondence. We love these emails. This is from Ben, who says, could be short for Benjamin, could just be a straight up Ben. He says, love the Thomas Blood episode, but wanted to throw in the story of the Irish crown jewels, which still haven't been found after being successfully stolen from Dublin Castle in 1907.
This is true. We didn't get around to it on the pod, but this is very much true.
Apparently this happened in 1903. A safe room had been installed in the castle. It was only after it was built that it was discovered the safe, which held the jewels, was too large to fit into the doorway. Because of this, the safe had to remain outside the strong room in the library. I mean, very Irish thing to do. To build a safe that won't fit in the room. There were only two keys to the safe, both kept by the Ulster King of Arms, Sir Arthur Vickers. I mean, I've been working out in the last few weeks, so I'm the new Ulster King of Arms. He was responsible for protecting the jewels. He carried one of the keys while the other was kept in a locked drawer in a desk at home. I mean, you're asking for
trouble. That's not good enough, Arthur. No.
Apparently one night after drinking, he handed his keys over to some mates, and the next morning he woke up draped in the crown jewels. I mean, he's put them on himself.
Brilliant. That's good crack though, isn't it? It'd be good for the gram.
Yeah. On the morning of July 6, 1907, a cleaning woman assigned to Bedford Tower found the door to the safe room standing wide open. It wasn't until later that afternoon when Vickers sent a message to the library to deposit the collar of a deceased knight in the safe that it was discovered the safe had been emptied and the Irish crown jewels were gone. They still don't know who did it, but security at Westfield's Footlocker, aka Shoebox, must be better than this. Nice. Lovely callback, Ben. Love what you've done there, and you've given us a great story too.
Love it. Alrighty, we've had lots of people getting in touch to confirm that they are in fact in the Trekkie / we're not fucking historians diagram after my little Tasha Yaris shout out. This one's from Christine. This is interesting. After Shane wondered whether all politicians had fat heads, I thought I'd do a bit of research into the width of various populist leaders' bonces. Although in keeping with the show, I can't say it's particularly precise or scientific in any
way.
Don't
worry about that.
The average adult head circumference is 55 centimetres in females and 57 in males. Kim Jong-un, Boris Johnson and Richard Nixon are almost certainly far above average. But I can be a bit more precise with your best pal, Shane, Donald Trump. Having visited Madame Tussauds recently in a moment of madness, I took a rough measurement of some of the waxwork Donald's dimensions, and the width of his face was almost clocking in at a hand and a bit. And I'm talking my hands, not his weirdly small hands. I would guess he's at least 60 plus all the way around. Nigel Farage has got a really weird narrow head, though, so the theory falls apart there. Keep up the good work.
That's true. I mean, if we can leave a lasting legacy, it's being the originators of the popular theory that all politicians have fat heads.
I hope that's our legacy, and I hope it lasts.
That's our gift to the world.
Yeah, look, it's been a time. Thank you so much for having the idea and asking me to be involved with it. I have loved every single recording. You make me absolutely howl with laughter every time, and I always come away in a better mood than I went in. And thanks to everybody for listening and for all the like the comments and stuff. Like, we don't always talk about it here, but we get so many comments on our Instagram and Twitter and stuff from people who are really enjoying it. And I do know there's going to be people, because I get quite attached to podcasts. I'm sure there'll be a couple of people who are like, oh, I was listening to that.
Well,
so,
you can look.
Apologies.
Here's the thing. Our email's still there, hello@nothistorians.com. So anything you send to that, we will still see.
This is true. You know? This is true.
But yeah, I've had so much fun doing this. Hazel, you're great. I think we'll still see each other.
Oh no. We're not gonna be friends. We're not gonna be friends after this, babe.
What?
Purely a business arrangement.
No.
Yeah, no,
Sorry about that. Oh, okay.
I'll come to one of your live shows if you pay me.
Yeah, that's imagine I'm like, we still need to do things, and you go, like, what do you want to do? And I just send you listings to all my live shows. I want you to buy tickets.
Here's all the cities I'm going to be in. No, 100% I'm going to come and support and see you and hang out. And I also want to visit this beautiful new house you've been building for forever.
Yes, I want to give a massive thanks to Finn as well, who's produced this podcast since day one. Do you know what he's like? He's like an old man who likes woodwork. He's taken a load of, and I've always thought this, he's taken a load of scraps of wood, which is, let's face it, is what we are.
Yeah.
And he's gone into his wee shed at the bottom of the garden, and over time he's made a nice wheelbarrow, which I think we can agree is what this podcast is. It doesn't, the wheel doesn't always work, but it
wonky
looks
wheel.
Great.
Bit of a wonky
and he
wheel.
Has a, yeah. He has it painted all nice. But,
I guess the job done.
Finn and everyone at Stack have been brilliant and done so much great work on this. So thanks to them all. Thanks to everyone who's listened to an episode. You can go back, you know.
Oh, sure. Look, they're there. Just listen over and over and over and over again.
We're like the Endurance. We're always still at the bottom of the podcast ocean. So you can go back and dig us up.
Find us there.
Also, we've completed Irish history too.
Do you know what, Shane? I think the other thing to say is that, like, we really have covered all of Irish history. There definitely isn't anything else to say. You know, like, I don't really think the famine or the troubles or the rising needed mentioning. You know, everyone knows about those. And that's kind of it. That's kind of it now.
Yep. we've conquered all that needed to be conquered. Here's, I'm going to throw over to you for you do the last sign off. I'll do the and remember, and then you get to swear for the last time.
Oh, thank you so much. You're a man after my own heart, Shane. Alrighty, well look, it's been a fucking pleasure. Thank you so much. These are a lovely pack of cunts all together. Had to get the word in.
And until do you know what I'm saying? Until next time. There you go. I'm going to say until next time. Remember,
we're not fucking historians.
We're Not Fucking Historians is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.